Oyez, oyez, oyez. The Honorable Supreme Court of Texas is now in session pursuant to adjournment.
Thank you. Be seated. Court has four causes to hear on oral submission this morning. The first two have been combined for oral argument. In the order in which we will hear these causes, they are as follows. Ector County, Texas and Others versus Martin A. Stringer from Ector County, and Ector County, Texas and Others versus Joe W. Hill, also from Ector County, combined for oral argument. Warning Company and Others versus Diana Casas from Hidalgo County, and Del Valle Independent School District and Others versus Enrique Lopez, Jr. and Others from Travis County. In all three of these arguments, the court has allotted 20 minutes for petitioners to present argument and 20 minutes for respondents to present argument. Petitioners may hold back a certain portion of their time for rebuttal by so advising the marshal of the court. These arguments are being recorded for the convenience of the court. If you desire to listen to a tape of any of these arguments, you may make application with our clerk. The court will take a brief recess in between each cause, but will complete all of these oral submissions before our lunch break. Court is now ready to hear argument from petitioners. Justices Mauzy and Cook are not here, and they will participate in the deliberation of this cause if decided before the expiration of their terms. Court is now ready to hear oral argument from petitioners in Ector County versus Stringer and Hill.
May it please the court, Mr. Richard Bonner will present argument for petitioners. Petitioners have reserved 5 minutes for rebuttal.
May it please the court. My name is Richard Bonner. I practice law in Odessa, Texas with the Schaefer Law Firm. I'm here today on behalf of the petitioners who are Ector County, Texas, the Ector County Commissioners Court, the present and former county judges of Ector County, as well as present and former commissioners of that court as it was constituted for the years 1989 to the present day. The respondents in the two causes before the court are Martin Stringer, who is a former constable of Ector County, Precinct 3, and Joe Hill, a present constable for Ector County, Precinct 4. The respondents in this case filed separate suits in Ector County before the Honorable Tryon Lewis, judge of the 161st Judicial District Court, seeking compensation and expenses for the times that they served as constables of Ector County, Texas. Those time periods, respectively, were 4 years and 54 months. The suits were consolidated for trial purposes before the Honorable Judge Lewis, and the court held a trial in the matter without a jury. Suit for mandamus relief was also requested in the cause of action. Constable Stringer served from the years 1985 to 88, while Hill served from 85 until the present day. The trial court, in considering the matters before it in the two consolidated causes, found that it had no jurisdiction to set a reasonable salary and denied the relief sought by the two plaintiffs in that case, Constables Stringer and Hill, with regard to the past years of service that they had rendered as constables. The court held that mandamus was the proper remedy to require reasonable salary and expenses to be set for the future, and so ordered. The trial court denied any monetary relief for the plaintiffs, both as to attorney's fees and the amount of compensation, as well as expenses, travel budget, 4 years past, but found that if it had had jurisdiction, it would have set a salary in the amount of $1,500. Court of Appeals for the Eighth Circuit reversed the trial court and found that the trial court did indeed have jurisdiction to consider the suit for a debt for what would have been a reasonable salary and expenses, and found attorney's fees objections that were urged by the court below, urged by the petitioners below, essentially were waived. This court has granted writ on three particular points. Point two, which states that the Court of Appeals erred when it held that the trial court had jurisdiction to determine what a reasonable salary and expenses for a constable would have been for prior years. Point three, which holds that the Court of Appeals erred when it held the respondents were entitled to recover judgments for the specific amounts pled for their reasonable salary and expenses. And finally, that the Court of Appeals erred when it held the respondents were entitled to attorney's fees.
Counsel, is your contention that the district court only has authority to grant prospective relief?
Your Honor, in this particular case, under the circumstances that were before it, I believe that is correct. The gravamen of our complaint is that the Court of Appeals decision effectively ignores this court's decision in Bondi 1 as well as the Bondi 2 decision issued by the Court of Appeals.
Well, I know you're primarily interested in this case, but in any case like this involving the salary of a county official committed to the discretion of Commissioner's Court, does the district court have authority to enter a money judgment, or can it merely order prospectively compel the payment of a reasonable wage?
It's our position under the facts of this case, as it would pertain to this case, that the court would not have the authority to order prospective relief, in large part because it runs against basically the precepts set out by this court as well as the Court of Appeals decisions. That is the commissioner's court that has the duty and the obligation as imposed by the Constitution, Article 16, Section 61, to set that salary. In assessing damages for back pay, back wages, the court necessarily must set the salary, that is the trial court, and that runs afoul of what this court has ordered previously. The issue before you concerns the proper role of the trial court in determining disputes between a constable or other elected county official who the commissioner's court has the obligation to set the salary for and a commissioner's court. It's our position that the trial court was in fact without jurisdiction or authority to assess those damages. There are several reasons for that. First, constable salary disputes are entertained pursuant to the general jurisdiction of the trial court are not subjected to the general jurisdiction of the trial court to determine claims. This court in Bondi held that the district court's jurisdiction is based upon the exercise of its supervisory control over orders of the commissioner's court and under its inherent power to protect and preserve the proper judicial functioning of administration. Mandamus is the proper relief. The assessment of damages for back pay, back wages, salary, things of that nature, necessarily requires the court to set a salary, that is the trial court. The Court of Appeals in the Bondi 2 decision specifically pointed out that the district court has no authority to set the salary. It pointed out the commissioner's court rather has the discretion and the power to do that. The setting of the salary is a discretionary act. The district court has no authority to direct a public official as to how that act is to be carried out. The reasonableness of the salary is solely a matter for the commissioner's court, and it's limited, that is, the trial court is limited when it reviews that decision to determining whether or not an abuse of discretion has occurred. The trial court should not and cannot be put in a position of having to second guess what a commissioner's court would have thought to have been a reasonable salary, and the Bondi 1 decision of this court doesn't require that require a trial court to try to do so. Intervention of courts in the area of setting constable salaries is limited to their supervisory control. And that supervision would seem to connotate or suggest a contemporaneous review, not as we had in this particular case, one that was implemented many years after the fact. In the case of the first year, we had a trial court that was facing the task of having to determine what a commissioner's court 4 years previously would have determined to have been a reasonable salary had it not abused its discretion. Policy-wise, we would argue that allowing back pay claims under the circumstances presented in this case is ill-advised. We believe it's important to the efficient administration of government that the budgetary process be respected. Those in the position of the constable in this case have every right to petition the commissioners to go before them in the budgetary process to request what they believe to be a reasonable salary.
Was that done in the Needham case?
Was not done, not to my knowledge, Your Honor. What we had in this case was also a grievance procedure that was in process. My recollection of the record is that Respondent Hill did avail himself to the grievance process for 1 year, but that Petitioner Stringer did not do so. They didn't avail themselves to it, at least in the earlier years. If and only if, at that point in time, the budgetary process does not produce a salary that the respondents believe to be a fair and reasonable salary, at that point in time, contemporaneously, they have every right to go before the district court to evoke the supervisory power of the court to review the orders of the commissioner's court. They have the right to do that. They did not do that at this point in time. They did it 4 years later with regard to the first year of budget. Suit was not filed until August of 1989 when Constable Stringer was no longer even in office. He was out of office and been out of office for approximately 8 months.
Is there any limitations period on the supervisory role?
I think it probably would be the same as with regard to the suit for a contractor of debt. That is a 4-year period.
So you could already be out of office?
Yes, you could.
And be supervised.
I think the doctrine of laches would also be applicable too, though, Your Honor, insofar as it applies. It would appear to me that it would contravene the efficient judicial supervision to allow officials several years later to come back into court and claim that they had been unfairly treated during the budgetary process. The net effect of what the Court of Appeals decision does is to effectively allow someone in the position of the constables in this case to sidestep judicial authority, not judicial authority, but to sidestep the commissioner's court as they make their decisions on the budgetary process.
Mr. Bonner, would you briefly address the attorney's fees issue? There's an argument made that your client waived any objections to the issues of attorney's fees, either if they would be allowed.
Yes, Your Honor. The Court of Appeals seemed to indicate that the case law as it existed at the time of the decision did not seem to authorize a suit against a county for attorney's fees, a collection of attorney's fees, because it's not either a corporation or a person. When the issue of attorney's fees came up in the trial court, counsel for the petitioners, for the respondents in this case, began asking the court whether or not the court would take judicial notice of the amount of attorney's fees that were deemed reasonable. At that point, counsel for the petitioners, myself, asserted that we were not waiving any objection to the awarding of attorney's fees in the case. It's made very specifically on the record that we were objecting to the award of attorney's fees. And the soliloquy, and excuse me, the dialogue between the parties is set out in the brief. Your Honor, specifically, I think waiver involves the intentional and known relinquishment of a fact or a right that the parties have, and it certainly wasn't reflected on the record.
Any questions? Thank you, counsel. The court is ready to hear argument from respondents.
May it please the court, Mr. Will Haddon will present argument for the respondents.
May it please this honorable court. Thank you for allowing me this time. One of the most important elements of the Court of Appeals decision in our cases is the clear distinction in its opinion between a case where a constable seeks a writ of mandamus to order the commissioner's court to set a reasonable salary for the offices of constable, and a case where a constable seeks a money judgment against the county for a reasonable salary owed to him based on services. Our base position is the case of the Court of Appeals runs side by side, two different remedies for two different situations. We're not arguing the bond is not the law. It is the law. The problem with petitioners is they're saying that this is a Bondi case, but it is not a Bondi case. This is a valid distinction. It's consistent with all the authorities, even those cited by petitioners. In Bondi 1, a mandamus case, the Supreme Court makes it clear that the constable was seeking a writ of mandamus ordering the commissioner's court to set a reasonable salary for the office of constable. On page 108 of Bondi 1, the Supreme Court said, we now turn to the question of the duty of the commissioner's court to set a reasonable salary for the position of constable. On page 419 of Bondi 2, a mandamus case, the court recognizes that the debt owed Bondi was by virtue of his having held the office of constable. Bondi 2's holding is based on the duties imposed on the office of constable, not on services rendered by the constable.
Who set the salary for past services, under your view?
For past services?
Yes.
If they're based on services rendered under Section 81.041 of the Local Government Code, allows a suit after you make your claim for those services rendered against the Commissioner's Court, then you have a right to go into the District Court and ask the Court to determine the validity of that claim for personal services rendered, not to ask him to find what the Court of Appeal, what the Commissioner's Court should have budgeted administratively.
Isn't that the same thing?
Sir?
You have Bonding 1 that says, Bonding 2, that says it is the Commissioner's Court's duty and power and obligation to set salary for constables.
Yes.
Correct?
Yes.
Now you bring a lawsuit that says the $50 a month that my clients were being paid is not reasonable. District Court set a reasonable salary for the past 4 years in one case. Isn't that what you're asking?
We're asking, the distinction is, we're not asking that the District Court budget for the office of constable.
Well, they have no power to budget anything.
No. The District Court has no power to budget anything. They're not an administrative body. But they do have the power to judicially determine the amount of salary for services rendered. If the constable comes in and has not rendered any services, he doesn't have any remedy except the Bondi case. Now, we were thrown out on our alternative count under the Bondi case by the doctrine of latches, and that's why we're not here on that. We're here solely on the money judgment case.
So you're not really asserting a right to a given salary during that time. It's based really on services rendered.
Exactly.
Based on quantum merit?
Something like that. That's the Sluder doctrine, yes, sir. But also, there's a legal money judgment remedy, which I will get into. It's under Section 81.041.
But you're still asking that the $1,500 set by the trial court is continuing the future as to Hill. Yes.
Correct. Sir?
You're asking that Mr. Hill be continued to be paid by the Commissioner's Court or by the county the $1,500 that the trial court said is reasonable.
We're not asking that. No, that's a separate case. You
are. Well, you bring that lawsuit after a few years down the road.
No. No, we're not asking they set it down the road. This case is only for what they have performed.
I understand, but the trial court said $1,500 per month was a reasonable salary for constables in this situation.
For services rendered, yes, sir. That's what the trial court found.
So $1,500 would not be reasonable for future services?
Well, that's not the issue. That's not the issue.
But you know the $50 that's being paid is not reasonable.
That's right.
So you'll come back later and assert the same lawsuit if you prevail here. At least, my point is, you can continue. If you were to prevail, and the Commissioner's Court pays this judgment that the Court of Appeals says the trial court must render, and continues to pay $50 per month ad infinitum, at some point, you'll keep coming back to collect what the and ask the trial court to set a reasonable salary.
Yes, sir. I think that's correct because they're violating the law by not setting it at $1,500. They violate the mandate of the Constitution to set a reasonable salary. They violate that. He gets $50. He performs his services. He goes back, and the money judgment tells the Commissioner's Court that you've got to pay him a reasonable salary based on services rendered. Yes, sir.
Did your clients avail themselves of the budgetary process before Commissioner's Court and they set their budget, that they request an increase in salary?
Yes, sir. There's evidence in the record that they did at times. Yes, sir. And there's evidence that the Commissioner's Court also knew they were performing services. Yes, sir. Now, in White versus Commissioner's Court, the trial court granted Justice of the Peace a writ of mandamus, ordering the Commissioner's Court to set a reasonable salary for the office of Justice of the Peace. The appellant court did not consider the money judgment question and affirmed the trial court because the trial court granted the official the mandamus relief he prayed for. In Commissioner's Court of Houston County versus Rogers, the salary for the office of several constables were involved. The trial court's order set out on page 754 specifically orders the Commissioner's Court to set a reasonable salary for the office of constable. And that's based on the duties of the constable. There are cases that support that same distinction, the Nacogdoches versus Winder and Jenkins cases. Now, on page 12 and 13 of Respondent's Supplemental Briefs, respondents have done a case categorization. In a brief way, I will endeavor to illustrate how this categorization may be helpful in your deliberation. Category 1 is the Bondi case. I don't know whether you've looked at the categorization or not. But Category 2 is the Broome versus Tyler County Commissioner's Court case, where a legislature set a minimum of $400 per month for the office of JP and the commission court budgeted $50, and the trial court rendered a money judgment against the county for the difference. Category 3 is the Court of Appeals decision in these cases, which allows a money judgment based on services rendered. Category 4 is not based on any actual case. This hypothetical case is where a constable asked the district court to determine the reasonable salary that the commissioner's court should have budgeted for the office of constable and to render a money judgment against the county based on such amount. The trial court refuses and says the only remedy in this situation is a mandamus remedy against the commissioner's court. The petitioner's main argument is this is a Category 4 case, but it's not. It's a Category 3 case based on services rendered, not based on a budget of what's for the office of constable. Categories 1 and 3, Bondi is 1 and 3 is our case, illustrates the distinction made by the Court of Appeals in these cases. Petitioner's arguments and authorities are in support of a hypothetical Category 4 case, not arguments and authorities against a Category 3 case. Just because a money judgment remedy is not available in a Category 4 case does not mean a money judgment remedy is not available in a Category 3 case. Now, Article 16, Section 61 of the Texas Constitution, which they argue in support of their position, does not mandate that only a commissioner's court can determine a reasonable salary for a constable. It only mandates that the extra county commissioner's court has no choice but to budget constables on a salary basis, not on a fee basis. The law is that the commissioner court has an opportunity to administratively determine a reasonable salary for a constable, regardless of whether he is asking for a writ of mandamus seeking to have the commissioner's court to set a reasonable salary for the office of constable, or asking for a money judgment for a reasonable salary based on the debt owed by a county for services rendered. The law provides a form of review of such administrative decisions of the commissioner's court consistent with due process and consistent with this distinction made by the Court of Appeals. Section 152.011 and 152.013 Local Government Code give the Commissioner's Court the opportunity to administratively budget the salary for the office of constable each year. Where a Commissioner's Court has not budgeted a reasonable salary for the office of constable, the Commissioner's Court's budgetary action is reviewable by a district court under its general supervisory control jurisdiction, as illustrated by the Bondi cases. And on the other hand, Section 81.041, Local Government Code, cited in the Farmer's case, provides that a person may not sue on a claim against the county unless the person has presented his claim to the commissioner's court and the commissioner's court has neglected or refused to pay all or part of the claim. Section 81.041 gives the commissioner's court the opportunity to determine administratively the validity of a constable's claim for a reasonable salary owed by county based on services rendered. When a commissioner's court refuses to pay such a claim when presented to it, its action is reviewable by a court of competent jurisdiction under Section 81.041, as illustrated by the Farmer's case and the Court of Appeals decision in our case. The wording of the statute itself is persuasive that the type of review intended by Section 81.041 is a judicial review under the original jurisdiction of a trial court and not a review under the general supervisory control jurisdiction of a district court. Such a statute contemplates that the suit will be filed in a court of competent jurisdiction. The use in the statute of the word pay in several places leads to the conclusion that a money judgment suit is contemplated by the statute. Depending on the amount in controversy, the suit could be filed in a trial court other than a district court, such as a county court or justice court, and a county court and a justice court do not have general supervisory control jurisdiction over the commissioner's court. It follows that 81.041 does not contemplate the suit will be one for mandamus. The statute provides that the suit will be against the county. A money judgment suit is a suit against the county, whereas a mandamus suit is a suit against the commissioner's court. It follows that the statute authorizes a money judgment suit. And what Section 81.041 means, and what the Court of Appeals held in our case is, it establishes that the suit to be filed upon the rejection of a claim for personal services is one for a money judgment against the county for the debt owed a constable for services rendered under the original jurisdiction of a trial court. It's undisputed that the claim presented to the Commissioner's Court was a claim for services rendered. See Plaintiff's Exhibits 70 and 87 for Hill and 72 and 88 for Stringer. And former State Bank cited versus Bowie County, cited by the Court of Appeals, recognizes that Section 81.041 is a legislative exception to the district court's general supervisory control jurisdiction over the commissioner's court. We quote, page 1306, the legislature was authorized by the terms of the constitutional provision conferring appellate jurisdiction and control upon the district court to accept any particular proceeding therefrom. Appellant was authorized to establish same in a court of competent jurisdiction. Farmers, his authority, that the trial court in our cases had original jurisdiction to determine the reasonable salary based on the services rendered and to render a money judgment, therefore, against Ector County. And there are other cases supporting that position, cited in the brief. Rusk County, Shelby County, Nacogdoches County versus Jenkins, Cook versus Nacogdoches County, and Men versus Hunt County. The Court of Appeal decision in our case can be affirmed on the basis of the authority of the farmer's case and Section 81.041 as a legal money judgment remedy, or it can be affirmed on the basis of the Sluder Doctrine, an equitable money judgment remedy, or both. Now, if a trial court should not intervene and will not intervene, if a commissioner's court fails to follow the law, the trial courts will intervene and should intervene. Stating that again, if they follow the law, they will not intervene. That is, if they set a reasonable salary to begin with, they will not intervene.
And in your view, who sets salary?
Okay,
what determines what's reasonable and unreasonable?
On a money judgment case, what you do, you go into court, and the first thing you have to prove, before you can even get to the jury or go any further, the commissioner's court failed to set a reasonable salary as a matter of law. And that's the same thing that's held in bonding. Before you get a man damaged, you have to do the same thing in bonding. The Court of Appeals recognize that. You have to prove it's unreasonable as a matter of law. Then you can go to your money judgment. So the court does not substitute its opinion, discretion, for that point. It's setting a salary on services rendered because the commissioner's court didn't do their duty in the first place.
Could it set a different amount for different constables?
Sir?
Could it come to a different determination for different constables? There's several constables in the
county. Yes,
and the district.
Yes, there may be cases where constables don't perform any service at all. If they don't, they don't have a case.
So the district court could decide that Constable A is entitled to recover $100, Constable B $5,000, Constable C $15,000.
A judicial determination based on services rendered in proof in the district court, yes.
And if one constable were particularly skillful and worked real hard, he might recover more than someone.
Exactly. That's what it's based on. Services rendered and benefit to the county.
And how far back? How many years back?
There's a 4-year statute of limitations, and they pled that, but that was overruled by the trial court, and they've not complained about it. The 4-year statute on services rendered, yes, sir.
4 years is the maximum period of time that back pay could be recovered.
Yes. Now, if the courts fail to follow their duty, the courts will intervene and should intervene, utilizing a mandamus remedy where appropriate, as in Bondi, and a money judgment remedy where appropriate, as did the Court of Appeals in this case. Petitioner statements on page 6 say that the trial court said reasonable salary, that the commissioner's court set a reasonable salary for respondents, and we challenged that statement. The findings show they did not. In Harris County versus Neville, the technical illegality that the commissioner's court had not budgeted any amount for the position of deputy sheriff for the month of January. In other words, in that case, the commissioner's court did not budget any amount for January of 1933, but the deputy sheriff rendered services. The deputy sheriff sued for money judgment, and the court granted a money judgment based on the services rendered. And that's a case where the budget's zero for a month, and that's unreasonable as a matter of law, so they can't get out of money judgment.
And that budget
case points that out very clearly.
That budget was made in advance of the services being rendered, I think.
Sir?
In the Neville case, I assume the budget was made up before the deputy sheriff rendered the services.
Yeah, well, that's true in all these cases. The budget is made up in October, and they don't start their service.
Your doctrine is not limited just to elected officials. I mean, because the deputy sheriff is obviously appointed by the sheriff.
That's what this Neville case said, yes.
Well, it goes really to any county employee.
Anywhere
who
you...
would perform services that, for some reason or another, the county has not chosen to pay for.
But they still have to get by that threshold of proving their salary is unreasonable matter of law. If you look at the, I cite the exhibit in the briefs, you look at the Ector County's budgets for 4 years, and the only one in the whole system of the constables that could possibly be held to be unreasonable matter of law. All the others are well in line of being reasonable. So you have to prove as a matter of law it's unreasonable. It's only the grossest of cases that will get into a money judgment situation.
But any county employee can bring a suit.
Under the Neville doctrine, yes. But the Sluder doctrine and also 81.841 will require that they have performed services. They can't come in just on and say and complain on a mandamus. They can complain on a mandamus, but they'll have to prove unreasonable salary. But they have to perform services before that any employee can come in on that. Yes. The key is services rendered. And if they don't prove any services rendered, they're out.
The deputy sheriff, for example, who was dissatisfied with the treatment of the commissioner's court, the treatment, I mean, the salary that was set by the commissioner's court under your doctrine, can come back, and after he's law and gone through the budget proceedings and budget process, and is dissatisfied with the salary, come back and say, for the last 4 years, my salary, a reasonable salary, is X number of dollars. Trial court mandated the county pay me this amount.
No, sir, not exactly.
Why not?
Well, the employee has to do is say, my salary budgeted was unreasonable as a matter of law. That means the commissioner's court violated the law to pay him a reasonable salary. So then they have to prove that they perform services.
What is the criteria for the trial court to determine as a matter of law whether $1,500 is adequate or $1,000 is adequate or $800 is adequate?
That's up to the judge, just like in the Bondi case.
The judge determined for himself without any
just like
criteria.
In the Bondi case. The Bondi case is the law, and they said it has to be unreasonable as a matter of law. That's the abuse of discretion. It has to be unreasonable as a matter of law. And that's where the courts will control the situation, right there, on that point. It's obvious that the philosophy of the Jackson County Commissioner's Court is it's all right, but it's a token budget for the Office of Constable, $20 a month, and to deny a legitimate claim for services rendered, even though such action is contrary to a clear mandate that constables be compensated in a reasonable amount. Now, petitioners' fears are unfounded that there will be a flood of lawsuits and take over the budgetary control of the commissioner's court. And that gets back to that same distinction. This is not trying to, not asking the court to say what they should have budgeted. It's asking the court to determine the reasonable, fair salary for services rendered, and that's a judicial decision.
What's the difference?
The difference is services rendered. The other difference is that the budgeting is for the Office of Constable. It's prospective. I'm sorry.
Well, when the budget is set in October, it's no way for the commissioners to know whether the constable who's going to take office in January is going to earn anything.
Well, the cases say that, and I'm not sure which one it is, it was in the brief, say that they cannot base their budget on what they do. It's based on what their duties are. It's a prospective thing, just like our budget. When we budget our money, we budget it forward. We don't budget on backwards.
So
we budget on the duties of
the commissioners then have to find at some point that they don't want a constable, even though a constable may be provided by law. They don't want a constable. They don't want a constable to be assigned any duties. And if they do that, then they are justified in setting a zero salary?
That's exactly what they did in this case. They had the sheriff's office performing all the services of a constable. They budgeted him $20 a month. And that's exactly what happened here.
But they had determined they didn't want it. They assumed
they do not have that option. The commissioner's court cannot refuse to accept the services of a constable. They set up a statute. They cannot deny them a reasonable salary budget-wise. The only thing the commissioner's court has to do is to set the salary. They do not control what a constable does. The constable has a right and a duty, and he can be held accountable under the penal statute if he doesn't perform his duties.
And the statute specifies the duties?
Yes, sir. And that's set out in Von B. 2.
So if a constable says, I've been elected, I'm here and I'm ready to perform the duties of constable, then he's entitled to a reasonable salary.
Yes, that's exactly right.
Whether he performs or not.
He performs law enforcement duties, and it's presumed that he will perform, under the cases, it's presumed he'll perform official duties. And he has, as showed by the evidence and the findings of this case, of all the duties that he did perform, and that's what the Court of Appeals decision is based on, and that what the services that are performed, the findings by the Court of Services performed was worth $1,500. And they should, and I'd like a little extra time.
Your time has expired, Counsel, right, unless there's a question. Thank you, Counsel.
I would like to briefly address the Sluder line of cases that counsel has just referred to. I believe that, as a practical matter, they misdirect the court's attention to what the real issue in the case ought to be. The issue is not whether or not constables are entitled to reasonable compensation. Constitution says that they are. This court says they are. The real question is, what's reasonable compensation? Should the commissioner's court or the trial court set it, and the procedure that this be utilized when they do set it? And as a practical matter, Vondi indicates that the trial court doesn't have the jurisdiction to set the salary. It's a discretionary act. They don't have the authority to set the commissioner's court how to go about doing that. Yes, Your Honor.
Are the duties of the constable set out statutorily, as opposing counsel says?
Yes, Your Honor, they are.
Yes, the constable does have statutory duties.
Yes,
Commissioner's Court has no discretion but to provide a reasonable salary for the performance of those duties. Isn't that
yes,
correct?
Your Honor, that's correct.
Could the court, obviously, I think anyone would say that the court does have the authority by virtue of its review function to say whether a salary that has been set by the commissioner's court meets the standards of reasonableness under the surrounding circumstances, the local economy, and what effort is required to perform those duties, wouldn't you say?
Yes, Your Honor.
They can say whether that's a reasonable salary or that's an unreasonable salary. Could the court, by the same token, examine those circumstances, examine those duties, make a determination of what a minimal reasonable salary would be? In other words, not set the salary, but that any amount below this amount would be unreasonable? Could they set a floor?
Your Honor, what they're doing is supplanting the commissioner's court authority by doing that.
I appreciate that, but could they set a floor? Not set a salary, but say, we find that this is unreasonable and any salary below X.
Effectively, they have the right to do that by their continuing mandamus review. They don't have to discharge the commissioner's court until they figure it gets to that minimum floor, whatever it may be. Because they have the ability to, as a part of their mandamus power, to continue to send the commissioner's court back. That's not enough. You haven't done what I think is reasonable under the circumstances. I'm not discharging you from the mandamus until you've accomplished that goal. And they come back after they feel, exercising their discretion, knowing what the facts are, knowing what the duties are, and as the court's indicated, the local conditions, whatever they may be. The mandamus remedy is sufficient. It is an adequate remedy to take care of the problem. And that's, I think, the way that the problem should have been addressed, as opposed to having a trial court stepping in and saying, this is what I think the reasonable salary ought to be. You've just effectively gutted the budgetary process for the commissioner's court.
Wouldn't the budgetary process and the salaries paid others for comparable duties, wouldn't that be a part of what the court would be compelled to factor in and determining what is reasonable, even if it's set by the commissioner's court?
I think probably it would.
The local economy, budgetary constraints, what's paid to others in the area for performing similar functions?
Yes, Your Honor, I think it probably would. The concern that I think is a legitimate concern on the part of the petitioners in this case is that, as Chief Justice has pointed out, the doctrine advanced by the petitioners in this case would basically open the doors to any county employee coming back as late as 4 years after the fact and indicating at that point in time that they didn't feel the compensation they received was reasonable. And
would it be necessary for any county employee to come before the commissioners when they're setting the budget and say, we don't think that the proposed budget for my office is adequate? Would it be necessary for them to do that, to lay a predicate in order to come back later and say, you didn't do what I asked you to do?
There's a salary grievance committee in place, but at least under the cases that have interpreted that particular framework as of this time, there's not a legal requirement that they exercise that prior to filing a lawsuit. It's a matter of policy. I think they should, but I don't think the cases have legally mandated that at this point. I'm out of time unless there's another question.
Thank you, counsel.
Thank you very much, Your Honor.
That concludes the first argument. The court will now take a brief recess.
The audience will please rise.